Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Welcome back, folks, to another amazing episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host today, Bruce Marable, and today we're very excited to chat with Emily Allen, Director of People Operations at Sierra Interactive. Emily, thanks so much for coming to the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Woo! Go, Emily! We are always very excited about having every guest on our show because we know you're taking time out of your very, very busy schedule. So, before we begin, can you give the listeners a brief overview of your journey, which led you to work in an HR at Sierra, and then explain a little bit about what Sierra does?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I fall into the category of HR people that found HR by accident. When I graduated from college years and years ago, I wasn't quite sure exactly what I wanted to do, sort of fell into an IT sales position, and IT is like so not my thing, so it's very ironic that's where I landed originally. And from there, the person who was in charge of HR at that company resigned, and there were some gaps. So I was asked just to kind of like help with some admin type stuff to support the HR and recruiting function, and I happily agreed to do that. So that's kind of where I got my first taste of HR, and found that I really liked that piece of my job a lot more than the IT sales piece. And from there, kind of made my way into recruiting, which I think it's a lot easier to break into recruiting than it is kind of, you know, a true HR or people ops kind of role. And over the course of many years, as I progressed in my own career, got more and more access to operations and HR in each one of the recruiting roles that I had. Ultimately, kind of building up a portfolio of experience that was relevant to a need that Sierra had 4 years ago when they were looking for a director of people operations. And so now at Sierra, my role kind of encompasses everything, all the experience that I've accumulated over the course of my career in terms of I'm overseeing recruiting, HR, benefits, training. So anything really that's a people-related thing at Sierra, I usually find a way to get my hands in one way, shape, or form.
And can you give the listeners a brief overview of what Sierra does?
Absolutely. So Sierra Interactive is a digital marketing agency. We have three core lines of business, SEO, paid search, and analytics. We're based in Philadelphia, and we also have an office in San Diego, which is growing. I think when I started back in 2013, we had like 5 people in our San Diego office. We're now close to 30, and we have 145 employees total between both offices.
Yeah, and you guys do a really good job. A quick aside, I met Will, the founder of Sierra, when he only had about 5 team members. So to be able to see the growth, it's been pretty amazing. So the reason why we wanted to have you on this podcast is because we look for people who have done extraordinary work in different core functions, in different core areas of HR. And you recently released a really great video and report about how you created a transparent compensation strategy. So we would really love to dig into that and go into best practices around that as well as the details so that someone can take your wisdom and take everything that you learned from this and put it into their own business. So let's rock and roll and get started. What is a transparent compensation strategy? Exactly what is that?
That's a great question. For me and for Sierra, what that means is transparently sharing the philosophy behind how our organization thinks about and executes assigning salaries to team members. So for SEER, every single team member should understand, based on their role, what their earning potential is, why their earning potential was defined within the range that it was, and how and when they're eligible to increase their compensation. So essentially, where they stand from a comp standpoint and why they stand there.
And how was compensation managed prior to you creating this new strategy? And was there a problem with how it was done before, or you just wanted to do it in a different way?
So we really wanted to be able to scale how we made decisions, and decisions were made kind of one-off. Our heart was always in the right place. We always wanted to be competitive. We always wanted to be fair. But different people made different decisions. They were inconsistent. We also dropped the ball a couple times where we just missed someone. Someone may have gone, you know, a year and a half, and we didn't bump them from a compensation standpoint, and they were doing great work. And we lost, you know, we lost a couple people because of that. Just, you know, it was just a mistake. So I really wanted to create a process that would help us to kind of scale how we make decisions to ensure that we were consistent and fair across the board, and that would eliminate human error and us just simply making mistakes that impacted our team and also led to us losing some good team members.
So on our podcast, we try to get into the tactical weeds so that people can really take a framework away from the different things that our guests are talking about. So what's all included in creating a compensation strategy, and why would a company need to do this in the first place?
Yeah, so in terms of thinking about a compensation strategy, honestly, when I began this process, I had no idea where to start. I was completely overwhelmed. And there's not a lot of information out there about this either. So kind of what my process entailed was first getting together with a couple of my industry peers. So identifying folks that were in agencies that had a similar culture as SEER, and getting with director of people ops folks and saying, like, hey, like, what do you guys do for compensation, and how do you manage this, and how do you communicate it to your team, and have you ever done anything like this? So there was just a kind of like a research phase of this project at first to kind of understand what the heck other people are doing, to try to learn potentially from others' mistakes and wins and that kind of a thing. And then with that information, I kind of started, you know, my own journey. And the next step there was like, okay, what resources do I want to use to do this? And there's a couple things out there. There's a number of different things out there for folks, to leverage. You could go to a big consulting firm and just pay someone to do this for your organization. There's lots of companies out there that like do this for a living, and it's their thing. You can go to a pay scale or, you know, salary.com or something and pay for them to actually do it for you and kind of hand you over all of the information with respect to your ranges and data behind it. And then you can simply just roll that out to your team. And the third option, which is the option that I chose to pursue, was to do it yourself. So the tool that I used was PayScale. And I used the free version of PayScale. There's a couple different versions that you can access. But it was important to me to use the free version because of our commitment to transparency. I wanted a team member not to have to take my word for it. So if I'm like, hey, yeah, you're an SEO account manager, and this is the range, and this is what the data says, this is what industry benchmarking says, they can go and use the same inputs that I used and that I researched to define their role, and duplicate that work and see for themselves what the tool is spitting out for them, so they don't have to take my word for it. So that was my next step in the process, was selecting the tool. I did that. And then it was all about crunching the numbers, right? Kind of creating a bank of roles at SEER, corralling all the different titles that we've had, divisions, all that good stuff. Quote unquote shopping those roles, to see what the industry said, in terms of range minimums and maximums, getting that data. interpreting that for SEER, in terms of, you know, for instance, analytics folks are much more expensive, from a market perspective than someone who is, an SEO or paid search. Those skills are harder to find and procure. But our analytics team at SEER, is one of the smallest, divisions. We're growing that division, very quickly, actually. But like, so what does that mean from a comp standpoint? What can we justify from a salary perspective? So, just making sure that we're interpreting the data, relevant to division revenue, within the organization, solidifying ranges, and then, communicating that to the company. I know that was a lot, so I'll pause there.
No, that was great. And I have so many questions about so many of those different stages you refer to. But before we go into the tactical plan, for all of our listeners out there, what would you tell them they need to think about before they even start to figure out or start to think, I should create a new strategy? I mean, should they think about certain goals, a certain process? What are the things that they should be thinking about before they even approach creating a new comp strategy?
That is an excellent and actually very critical question. So the first thing that I would think about is company culture. Like, is this something that aligns with the values that your organization, believes? Like, first and foremost. And then secondly, the thing that I would consider is, like, what types of communication channels, do you have in place? Within your organization, do you guys have like platforms and like are you good at communicating change? You know, what do your employees respond to? Do you have a regular cadence of all hands meetings? Like, is email good? Like, how will you roll this out from a communication perspective? Because that is also absolutely critical to people understanding and kind of buying into this process as well.
Okay, so I've thought about it. I say, okay, Emily, that's great. I thought about the culture. I thought about all the things that our specific organization would, how it would dictate our comp strategy. So now, I think it's time for me to get buy-in from my leadership team. Mm-hmm. So how did you get buy-in for your leadership, from your leadership team, to actually get the resources, the time, and the autonomy to take over this process? And for the listeners out there, how do you advise them to go on about doing the same thing and getting buy-in from their leadership team?
I don't know if I'm going to be really helpful in this category, Bruce, because honestly, like, the buy-in piece for me was the easiest part of my process. Like, the buy-in was honestly, like, pretty immediate. And again, it comes down to our culture and core values where, like, we believe in transparency and we believe in doing the right thing. And everyone at the company and certainly senior leadership, you know, when a mistake is made, when somebody screws up, when we've learned how to do something better than the way that we've been doing it, like, nobody has a problem saying, like, standing up in front of the company and saying, we made a mistake, guys. Like, we screwed this up and here's what we're going to do about it. So I think at everyone's core, certainly everyone that represents senior leadership at SEER, like, believes in doing the right thing, and everybody believed in, and everyone believes that, sharing, like, the why behind such a sensitive subject and empowering the team is the right thing to do. And everybody also believes in transparency. And testing things out. So, the senior leadership team was honestly completely on board. Folks had a lot of good questions, and wanted to make sure that, that we assessed our risk, right? That we weren't just kind of like, let's just do it and see what happened. That we were thoughtful about our approach and execution, but in terms of, like, should we do this or should we not do it, that was a really easy sell, and probably, I don't know that it was a sell. It just made sense.
Well, that's awesome, and kudos to you and your leadership team and SEER overall for having that type of open and transparent culture from the start. But assuming that the listeners out there, they thought about it, they were very thoughtful about why they were doing it, and they either have a similar culture as SEER, or they were able to get buy-in from however they did. I want to now dig into some of the decisions that you made and talk about them in a little bit more detail. So you said that you could have either worked with a consulting firm, or you could have worked with some type of software provider to try to do it for you, or you could do it DIY, which is what the option that you chose. Can you go into a little bit more detail in regards to how did you really come to the conclusion of having a DIY strategy, and what would you recommend for the listeners out there who are thinking, maybe I should do a DIY strategy too, but I don't know if I have enough resources or enough time, or I'm so busy that maybe I should hire a consultant. Can you give some more details around that?
Sure. So as I got started, I was kind of like, all right, what is my North Star here? Like, what's the goal of this? And also, like, what's the current state? And the goal of this was, to create, you know, more transparency. I wanted the team to be empowered. I wanted them to understand, like, what the data is, like, why they're being paid what they are, what their earning potential is, and how they could, future looking, make an impact on their salary, and on their earning potential while they're in their current role, and if they wanted to get promoted, what do they need to do, right? So that was kind of the goal. And of course, I had data going into this saying, I surveyed the team saying, like, how many of you guys, like, understand how CR makes salary decisions? So I asked a number of different questions to say, like, this is where we stand from a data, this is, like, the level of understanding the team has now. I want to increase this level of understanding to, you know, X. And I ended up getting to, like, 92% of the team, once I rolled this out, understanding how CR makes compensation decisions, which was great. Aside from just kind of being like, all right, well, what's the overall goal here? I was kind of like, well, where am I starting? Like, what does the landscape look like now? And honestly, there was just so, like, it was kind of like nothing existed in terms of process and strategy. I mean, we had a way of doing things, but again, it was like we weren't like ignoring salaries and compensation, but like it didn't scale. It was inconsistent. So like even a small change would have been an improvement, in my opinion, from kind of where things stood. So then I kind of thought about, again, like, you know, being able to duplicate process, empowering the team, the resources that I had, budget that I had. And I thought that for us, based on what the overall goal was with transparency and empowerment, kind of where we were starting from, which was, you know, we didn't have like a complex system that, you know, I just needed verified or something. We needed to build this from the ground up. And also kind of understanding our culture, that's kind of how I landed on the DIY strategy.
And speaking of culture, how much do you think compensation drives things like culture, employee engagement, turnover? Do you think that once some of those areas are going downhill or they're becoming worse, that drives companies to change compensation? Or do you think compensation... updating your compensation proactively can really benefit you in those core areas. Do you get what I'm saying?
I think so. I'll take a stab at that. Okay. So I don't think that like compensation like is the same thing as culture. And I don't know that it necessarily feeds into culture. I kind of look at that separately. In terms of like there's like basic needs, right? And to to like, you need to pay someone fairly and competitively to make them feel respected and appreciated, and to ensure like they can pay their bills, right? Like, or otherwise they're going to bounce and go somewhere else, regardless of how much they love the company and the role. Like, they have their own needs that they need to meet. So I think it's important to be fair again and competitive. I think it's critical to be able to attract people and retain people, but I don't think that it's the same thing as culture. Does that answer your question?
It does. And you strike on something which is great and feeds into my next question around basing compensation competitively and but also making it fair. And earlier you spoke about minimum and maximum. So can you just give the listeners an explanation of how do you look at the minimum and maximum, and then how did you decide where do you wanted to be on that scale, whether you wanted to pay in the bottom 50% or you wanted to pay in the top 50% or the top 20% or the top 90%, and how that works and aligns in regards to attracting talent?
Yeah. So when I pulled the industry data where we fall within our role ranges, we don't start any role below the 40th percentile of of market. And when I say market, like I specifically shopped the type of organization that SEER is. And so what that means, we are privately held. One of my inputs was the number of employees that we had, the industry within which we operate, all that good stuff. So I had a number of different inputs that kind of spit out salary ranges beginning at the 10th percentile of market, all the way up to the 90th. So our role range begins at the 40th percentile of what the industry market is. That's kind of where you start at SEER, and you're able to progress to the 95th percentile, sometimes beyond, depending on the role, in terms of where our max is. And of course, you know, in terms of like, well, why would you land at the minimum versus, you know, at the 60th percentile of market or 90th percentile? If you're someone that's green, that's coming in maybe, you know, straight out of college with only a couple of internships under your belt, of course, you know, we're going to align your starting comp range with the experience that you're bringing to the table and kind of the impact that we anticipate that person's going to have. When they immediately join the organization, and they're gonna skew more towards the minimum range.
Got it. And one of the things that always seems very difficult, or at least to me, from a compensation strategy, is to compare the different titles and roles when they have two totally different names. So maybe you call your search engine marketer search engine ninjas, but the title is in the compensation data is search engine marketing, but then in another set of compensation data, it's search engine executive. How do you deal with that?
Great question. And that's another reason why I landed on PayScale. And I swear this like isn't a PayScale plug. there's a lot of tools out there. And I'm indifferent, but one of the things that I really liked about PayScale is that you didn't you had the ability to not only shop titles, because I completely agree with you. Like, everybody calls these things, especially in our industry, these like creative different names, and they all mean different stuff. So it really skews the data. So with PayScale, I was able to define what it means for SEER, like the three top skills and requirements for an SEO associate versus an SEO account manager versus an SEO team lead. I was also able to say like, okay, here's the SEER title, but I'm not going to use that. Like, I'm going to use this as like the industry title, and select what I believed in working with the team and working with, like, I involved many people in this process. So it wasn't just me making these decisions. I wanted to leverage all the brains that I have around me and experience. So that's another way that I got buy-in, is that I included a lot of people in my process from start to finish. So I shopped like the skills. If folks had managerial responsibilities, you're able to carve those out. So you were shopping actually like the content of the role versus just the title. So I was able to get around that.
Nice. So the title of this is Creating a Transparent Compensation Strategy. And I'm sure some listeners are saying, well, is there such thing as too much transparency around compensation? And does that cause confusion? And does it give too much leeway for the employees to then try to basically pick apart your methodology around creating compensation? And I know that probably has to do more with culture than anything, but just trying to see, for the people who are listening and buying into what you're saying, they might be asking that question.
Totally. And it's a legit question. So are you asking kind of how I thought about that and approached it?
Yeah. How did you think about it? How did you approach it? And do you think there's a such thing as too much transparency in sharing how you came up with the compensation strategy?
Yeah. So in terms of how I thought about it, so I got a task force together. So I picked a number of team members that had expressed interest in this, and that I also knew were pretty vocal, and could be skeptical at times, like not in a bad way, but just like asked a lot of questions. So I included them as a focus group as I built the methodology. And I also had a soft launch where before I launched this to the entire organization, I launched it to a couple different groups of folks, my focus groups, to like see how they reacted, and basically was like, guys, tear this apart. Like, what am I not thinking of? Like, what are the issues here? Got feedback. Of course, made the executive decision regarding should I incorporate this feedback, should I not? What's appropriate, what's not? But got that feedback, and then made the appropriate changes and edits prior to launching to the entire organization. Additionally, whenever I launched this, I was very clear that, like, I was actually unqualified to do this, which sounds like a funny thing. Stand up and say before you launch this huge, huge thing. But I was like, team, guess what? I've never done this before. This is a first for me, okay? And what I can promise you is that this is not going to be perfect, and there's going to be mistakes. So, like, here are some ground rules that I want to set for us as an organization. As you disagree with the things I'm saying, as you have questions, how to voice concerns, here's how to, like, raise your hand to say, hey, like, I want to talk about my comp. Like, I'm a little confused about this. So I thought about all of those different things and kind of gave a disclaimer and set some ground rules, as I was launching this. And then the second part of your question, regarding, like, is there such thing as being too transparent? I think the answer to that is probably yes. I think you always have to weigh, like, you know, is being transparent for the sake of transparency going to ever put somebody, some individual on your team or even a group of people, within the company, in an uncomfortable spot? And if the answer to that is yes, then, like, you really have to question, like, what the purpose and goal of, like, being that transparent is. So for instance, like, if I only have one, if I have a division of one, which I do right now, or someone that is, like, in a role of one where I don't have several other people, and I'm saying, here's the role range or here's the comp for this role. And that kind of stinks for that person because they're basically, I'm sharing with the whole organization what that individual is making. Like, that isn't really fair. So I thought about things like that, and I didn't. So my solution there was I kind of grouped roles together. So we have one developer on the team right now, only one. And that person sits within, I have them in the creative division, and I showed the role range for a number of different roles within the creative team. So you're not able to really, specifically decipher, like, as a dev, specifically what that person is earning.
That was a great answer. And you just made me think about something that wasn't originally on my script, which is pretty interesting. How do you set compensation for yourself?
So I did the same process as I did for everybody else on the team, and every other director. And the way that we shared that is we did share executive level comp, and we grouped all execs together, saying here's the minimum, here's the max that ranges for folks that sit on the executive leadership team. So we shared that. We didn't want to hide from that. And we transparently kind of shared what execs earn at Seer, in front of the company.
Wow. How did that go?
It went fine. There was no complaints. We haven't had any fallout. I didn't receive any specific feedback, regarding sharing the executive level range or anything like that. I mean, we shared all role range levels, so it was kind of like, well, why would we leave out execs? That's, like, that's weird. We're sharing this.
So you shared the comp levels of the execs, but just to be clear, each employee at Seer doesn't know how much each other employee is making, correct?
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And for the listeners out there who think this is great and they're thinking about doing the same thing in the near future, can you give some timelines or time frames around how much time this took you to do, how many people you had involved before someone starts to go down this path to set expectations for if they have the time, capacity, or resources to do this?
Absolutely. So this took a year. This took a year to build and roll out from start to finish. I was the primary kind of driver, if you will, but I did have the support of the leadership team. I worked really closely with the president, Crystal, and with our director of finance, Steve. I am, like, not a numbers person, so I leaned on Steve, like, really heavily for his math skills and kind of creating bands and ranges and things like that. And then, of course, I leveraged the team. So I had those focus groups and different meetings with team members to get feedback and so forth. So there are a lot of different people involved in this, but I'd say like my core, I had a core team of about five people that I leveraged pretty frequently, as I pursued this.
That's interesting that you said you're not a numbers person, but you took on what's probably the most math driven project that an HR could ever do.
To do this, but it worked. Yeah, no, I think I was able to leverage the right people, within the organization. I think I'm also just kind of hard on myself naturally.
Hey, podcast listeners, we're about halfway through this episode, so now it's time for a word from our sponsor. But don't worry, we'll be back.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but I have some questions for my HR leaders listening. Are you currently drowning in spreadsheets or having to log into too many different systems for all your workforce data? Are you spending way too much time creating HR reports with no time left to actually analyze the data? Are you tired of being the only executive without a dashboard to share with the leadership team? If this sounds like you, then check out EmployeeCycle, the HR metrics dashboard built to solve this problem. EmployeeCycle brings all your workforce data together into a user-friendly dashboard by connecting to all your HR systems and spreadsheets. Sign up for access to the beta now at EmployeeCycle.com and learn how to get your HR source of truth. Again, that's EmployeeCycle.com. Now back to the amazing podcast episode.
And you said when you first started this, or maybe even before you started this, you went to your peer group of other HR professionals at different agencies and companies similar to Seer. What was some of the advice and feedback they gave you to make you feel more comfortable about going down this path?
To be honest, most people were kind of like, well, let me know how that goes.
Okay.
I haven't done that yet. And then there were others that actually, so no one had done the DIY method. Folks had leveraged consultants, compensation consultants, where they paid someone to come in and essentially complete the analysis that I did, for their organization. So that was the route that, if someone in my peer group had done this, that was the route they had pursued. So, yeah.
Interesting. So, is it safe to say that you're pioneering the transparent compensation strategy? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know.
The DIY transparent compensation strategy? Well, you heard it here on the podcast. It's here. So, another thing that I want to go into, because we can always talk about the good parts, but let's go into some of the potential problem areas around doing this. Did you run into any issues with the strategy? Did you get to a certain point where you just said, you know what, the hell with this, we're just going to get a consultant? Or as you were going through this over the course of a year, the further you went down this path, the more clear the end goal seemed?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we didn't run into like too many like enormous concerns and or roadblocks. One of the things that happened after this was launched, which is, I think, is a good thing, ultimately, is that we got a ton of questions and requests for, that the team members had to specifically like make cases and discuss their compensation and essentially ask for more. So I think it's important for organizations that are considering pursuing something like this, like make sure that you have the bandwidth to respond to the inquiries and questions and the volume of inquiry and questions that this is going to generate from the team, because the last thing you want to do is kind of plop this huge thing on your company and then like be unresponsive to all of the questions and conversations that team members are going to naturally naturally want to have. And I'd be lying if I said that, like, there weren't times that, like, I was honestly just, like, totally overwhelmed with the volume of requests that, that I received. And I knew that I was going to receive some, and I created, like, forms, like, this is what you need to do to request time with me and or your director to talk about comp. So, like, I thought about process, and I thought about, like, how to kind of wrangle this and control it, knowing that people would have questions, but it was still pretty overwhelming. And then the second piece, which, still is challenging, is that so I'm not done with this project. I had always said kind of phase two of compensation strategy is very clearly, calibrating comp with performance in a way that scales and in a way that is quantitative. So we have performance reviews at CIER right now and all those good things, and we regularly give feedback to team members, but we don't, like, assign someone, like, you, great job, you know, over the past quarter, Bruce, like, you are a 4 or you're a 3 in terms of performance level, and that 3 or that 4 correlates with this number within your role range. So I wanted people to understand, and that's still on, that's something that I'm going to be working on when I get back from maternity leave, is quantitatively calibrating performance with compensation. So folks know, like, if they're like, I want to be at that maximum range for my role level, I want to be able to say, this is exactly how you get there. And I can't do that right now. So it can lead to, sometimes, some ambiguity, when you're having these conversations with team members about, like, why exactly they fall, dollar for dollar, where they do within their range.
And you said employee communication is clutch in this process, but you also see that you can sometimes become overwhelmed by all of the employees requesting to be able to talk to you about this. How did you manage that? Were you using Slack, email? Did you have a Google Calendar where people could schedule time? What did that look like?
So I use a Google Form. So first thing I shared, and the deck that I created to launch this to the company is actually shared publicly. So that's on CIER's website under CIER Labs. But I, of course, like, post launch, I immediately shared that with the team. I shared various spreadsheets of my work and of the logic that was applied to actually build the ranges, so people could actually go and duplicate that if they didn't buy what I was saying, to see what the data spit out specifically for them. And then I also shared a Google form that would allow someone to disclose what they want to talk about, and, you know, share the role, the vision, all that stuff, so I could kind of incorporate the right people in that meeting. And then from a leadership standpoint, leadership team standpoint, I had time blocked out on my calendar and every director's calendar for a couple of months following the launch, so that, like, that time was already protected. And as people completed the Google form requesting to have a conversation, I would just, like, slot them in to those compensation time slots that I had reserved to review team member questions over the course of several months.
So after doing all this and creating this transparent compensation strategy, are you, your leadership team, and employees overall pretty happy with this?
Yeah, I think so. And the data says so as well, in terms of the level of understanding with how compensation decisions are made and when they're made, within the organization. I always think there's room for improvement. Like I said, the performance piece in my mind is probably the largest piece that is missing. And next year, I'm going to be coming up on 2 years having pulled this data and launched it. And I believe it's every 2 years this should be refreshed. So I'm going to have to go through this. I mean, the blueprint is built, so it should be less work from that perspective. But I'm going to need to rerun data to see what the market is saying in terms of ranges and all that good stuff. So now there's a piece of this that is maintenance. And there's a piece of this that needs to be kind of improvement, and also incorporating the performance piece into this ongoing strategy moving forward as well. So I think overall we're pretty happy, but you know, I definitely want to keep evolving this and making it even better for the team.
That's awesome. And we'll definitely have to have you back on the podcast to talk about how do you align compensation and performance once you do that, because I'm sure a lot of people have questions about that. But last question about this strategy that you created, what did you learn? And if someone came to you the same way that you went to your peers and said, hey, I'm trying to do compensation, I'm really stressed about it, I don't know if I have the time, resources, capacity, I need to get buy-in, what would you tell them? What's the advice that you would give them?
That's a really good question. I'd say don't let your own like internal like doubts that you have within yourself kind of overwhelm your ability and desire to want to do something. I shared this with the team when I launched this, that like I'm like, guys, this isn't perfect. And I haven't done this before. And that was a really big hurdle for me to overcome because, this was a big thing for the company. And I'm like, ooh, like, am I the best person to do this? Like, I want to make sure that this is the best thing possible for the team. And, there was no ego involved. It wasn't like, I have to own this. Like, I just truly wanted the best for the team. A big part of me was like, I doubted my ability to do this because I hadn't done it before. But I think as long as you have the desire and you genuinely care, and you have the willingness to like do the research and, you're also willing to kind of fail and own it and then, and improve it moving forward, you're going to be successful and just kind of don't fake it to make it. That would be my advice. I would be transparent and honest with the folks that could potentially be impacted, and don't be afraid to ask for help and understanding.
That is awesome. So now we're going to move into a section which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. We're asking a real question, okay. A random question, and a ridiculous one. You ready? Ready to play? All right. So the real question. I'm not sure if you ever heard this podcast before, but I rave on and on about bread pudding. I'm a bread pudding connoisseur. If I could eat it every day, I would. Wouldn't be the most healthy thing to do. But if I could, I would. So my question to you is, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I'm not a really big bread pudding person, I guess.
Oh, no!
It's fine, but like I wouldn't even begin to know what to tell you about how I like it made.
So, I mean, I've been to your office. I know exactly where you are. I actually don't live that far away from where your office is. And you live so close to North Third, and they have some of the best bread pudding.
Really?
Yes, we're going to have to meet. Okay. And we're going to go to North Third, and I'm going to have to put you on. It will change your life.
All right.
All right. So, the random question. What's your go-to song at karaoke?
Ooh, my go-to song at karaoke. Probably Sweet Caroline.
Ah, why is that?
I don't know. I think it's just by chance. I think like that's always been the one that I've been like, yeah, let's do this.
Okay, and when you do it, is it a song where you say, hey, all right, everybody, move back. I get the spotlight. Or is it something where you pull all your friends in and you want them to sing it with you too?
The latter, for sure.
Okay. And the ridiculous question. What do you think are some of the most ridiculous things that you've seen people in HR doing to make their company better? And that HR should stop doing? And this could be related to any function of HR. Compensation, diversity, sexual harassment, culture, you name it.
That's a good question. I don't know if I have like a specific example, but I'd say, I think HR over the years may have gotten a bit of a bad rap, and I think that's because folks can just be so cold, and just like it's like they're an extension of like the legal team or something, versus no offense to attorneys out there at all. But, like, it's almost kind of like robots that are there to like just put benefits in place and like fire people and just don't really have a heart. So, you know, I think it's really important to just like be a human being, and like relate to team members and don't hold yourself on like this really high pedestal and like kind of just share who you are and like be vulnerable. I think the HR people that don't show their vulnerabilities and like aren't willing to connect with like the humans that are behind the work, and kind of work on a more transactional level, whatever that means as it relates to the initiatives that they're owning, I think is just ridiculous.
Well, you've heard it, folks. So thank you for playing the role of the random and the ridiculous.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite and least favorite part of HR?
So my least favorite part of HR probably is open enrollment every single year. And okay. Like administer it, like the admin piece of benefits. And my favorite part of HR, that's super easy, and it's like it's being able to work with so many awesome people in various different capacities, and building relationships, whether that be with a candidate or with a team member.
Last question. Any final words of wisdom or nuggets that you want to share for anyone looking to create a new compensation strategy?
I'll go back to the advice that I started with, and it's really think about why you want to do it, and ensure that it aligns, with your culture. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Like I would say duplicate what I did. I was so beneficial, just to kind of reach out to my peer group. Even though most folks haven't done the DIY version, just having that, like, support. A lot of folks shared, like, let me know how that goes, but like, we've got your back. Like, if there's anything that I can do to help, like, let me know. I think, at least in Philadelphia, I found that the startup HR community is just like super, super, supportive. And there's such a community. So having that support of a peer group and, getting the input of others, is just super, super helpful. So don't be afraid to reach out and to ask for help, and make sure you kind of know what your North Star is, and understanding, like, don't just do it to say you did it. Make sure you have a reason why you want to do this for your organization.
Emily, that was awesome. And this podcast was awesome. Thank you so much for coming to this studio, as I like to call it. This was great. Let's give another round of applause for Emily. Woo! Thank you so much. Oh, so where can people find you and Sierra Interactive on the internet? And are you currently hiring?
Yes, we are currently hiring. Check out our website, sierrainteractive.com/careers. Additionally, I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn. You can see my bio on the Sierra team page as well.
Okay, and we'll definitely put all that info in the show notes. Well, it's been another amazing podcast episode with Emily, and we thank her so much for giving her time and sharing all of her knowledge around creating a transparent compensation strategy. And we'd please like to ask that if you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and share with all your HR colleagues. Also, if you're tired of manually creating a KPI dashboard for all your HR data, you should definitely go and check out employeecycle.com and sign up for the demo of the HR dashboard. Well, folks, we did it again. Stay tuned for the next episode. And for the HR pros out there, keep hiring, training, and retaining the best workforce possible. Thanks, Emily. Later, kids.